This is another iRaw podcast.
So people care, and we're just, you know, we're just making sure that we're able to establish that connection that'll, you know, to open up something in them that already exists and that we help them understand or discover.
My name is Katya, and this is The Animal That Changed You. I believe loving an animal is one of the most accessible, most available portals for self-healing in the whole world. It's my privilege to encourage you to open your heart to animals and challenge you to deepen your compassion just a little bit more. Welcome to The Animal That Changed You.
Hi, my dear friends. I have a little bit of a cold today, so I sound like I have a little bit of a cold. Welcome back to The Animal That Changed You, and thank you for being here and being friends. Have you ever read Letters to a Young Poet by Rainer Maria Rilke? It's one of my favorite books in the whole world. I have some things I want to share about that beautiful, beautiful book. One thing is this quote, and I'm going to read it now. Animals see the unobstructed world with their whole eyes, but our eyes turn back upon themselves, encircle and seek to snare the world, setting traps for freedom. I think that's so beautiful, and it's really kind of captures what this episode is about today. Look, you don't have to be vegan or marching for animal rights for this episode to mean something to you. And I hope that you'll have an open heart and mind as you listen to Sharon Nunez from Animal Equality, a fantastic organization. She's our guest today. And I hope you'll just listen, just consider and listen, just listen. Open your ears, open your heart, open your mind, and just listen, just hear it. And wherever you go from there is absolutely right and true and celebrated for you. And it'll be part of your journey as you grow and go on as an animal lover, seeking to give back to animals the chance to see an unobstructed world with their whole eyes. Wouldn't it be nice for us and for them? Take a listen.
I really am very, very honored and excited to introduce today's guest, Sharon Nunez. Hi, Sharon. How are you?
Hi, Katya. I'm very good. I'm so happy to see you and to be on this podcast. And I adore you, as you know, so it's an absolute treat to get to spend this time with you.
It is for me, too. And you know what? I should have probably said, it's Sharon Nunez, go it.
Fine. Sharon Nunez is fine. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Good enough. Yeah.
I mean, I can't wait for everyone to hear me trying to get your name right. That's not humbling at all. Sharon, I want to geek out about you just a little bit. You are the co-founder and president of Animal Equality, which is an incredible and international nonprofit organization. You run this organization. You lead protests, you document animal cruelty, you are changing things on the ground floor, also on the law side, up, down, and around, you're everywhere. But your work has been featured in the New York Times, BBC, and El País, which is a Spanish, in Spain, the equivalent of New York Times.
Yeah.
They called you one of the Spanish women changing the world in 2018. Just
correct.
You saw that.
Yes.
You're a speaker at conferences and universities from Harvard to MIT. Animal Equality is a top charity. And you also do this really cool thing, which means a lot to me because I love books and I'm a writer. You're the co-director and editor of Libra Anima, which is a book collection. And you publish essential books basically that focus on justice and equality in Spain and Latin America.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Not quite sure how you do all those things.
Well, I have a wonderful team. So Animal Equality's co-founders. Jose and Javier are also very much involved in the organization, and they co-run Libra Anima with me. And we have the person who runs the publication, Marcos. And actually, our next book is going to be a book about activism by one of my heroes. That is Henry Spira. That is one of the people who started animal rights activism in the U.S. And it has an intro by Peter Singer. So.
Oh,
it's going to be a very, very special book. We've also translated Melanie Joy and other very important international authors.
Sharon, I want to tell you that I reached out to Peter Singer for this podcast months ago, you know, because I'm like, it was like reaching out to Paul McCartney. Like I was like, I was like nervous, like drafting the email. I'm like, dear Mr. Singer, you invented animal rights. And, you know, like, I'm like shaking, crafting an email alone in my house. And I hit send and I basically asked him to come on the show. And he wrote me back, which was
so, he did?
Yes.
That's awesome.
And it was exactly what I would imagine him responding. Like, oddly, it was so awesome. He was just like, Katya, thank you for your email. If you've read the foreword in version 7 of Animal Liberation or something like that, like some version, he was like,
yeah,
know that there has not been an animal that changed my life. I'm not that guy. Like that one animal changed me. I was like, sorry, sir.
Well, many, many animals. I know that Animal Liberation, I read Animal Liberation in 2002. I was already a vegan when I read Animal Liberation, but there was two events that really changed my perspective of animal protection. One of them was reading Animal Liberation and understanding the philosophy and the ethics, this idea that animal of speciesism, right? That the idea that animals are different from us, their species of belonging does not determine the protections they deserve. So that was definitely key for me. And then a meeting, Oscar Horta, who's a Spanish philosopher, who also was a follower of Peter Singer and has developed animal ethics very strongly in Spain and Latin America. Those two people really were key in, so Peter Singer and Oscar, and me deciding to dedicate my life to animals. I love Peter Singer. I think he's, of course, a genius, one of the most important philosophers of our time. And I'm honored that he supports animal equality. And I'm honored that he would write the intro to this book that we're about to publish.
That's huge. And he is magnificent. And I'm just so taken by someone who just is above the ego of it. You know, you can feel it. You can feel it in all his literature, in all his works. Like he's just doing it because he believes and it's the right thing to do. It's beautiful. I truly admire him so much as well. I want to talk to you today about animal equality, both as in terms of your organization and how you work and how you manage to keep going despite all that footage you see, despite all that you know, because I certainly get overwhelmed by the lastima, by the empathy, but also animal equality in terms of like, is it changing? Are we making headway? I think we are. Sometimes I think we're not. And I also want to know if there's an animal who changed your life. So however you want to begin.
Absolutely. I'll start with the last one because there has been a lot of animals that I've met that have changed my life. But I think that there's two in particular that, actually three. I hope it's fine to say three.
Oh, it's, yes, absolutely fine. The more the better.
I think the first one would be my first cat, Pantera. I had just become vegan. I think it was about 2002 and I was living in Madrid. I'm originally from Spain. I moved to the US about nine years ago. And I just became a vegan, but I'd never had, and there was never, we'd never had animals at home. Those were the outskirts of Madrid, but you wouldn't really see any farmed animals, of course. I'd never been to a farm. Spanish television had never shown footage of farms or slaughterhouses or even just animals weren't really, even though I was a vegan, animals weren't really part of my life. I was walking the street one day and there was this cat, this black cat, and clearly in what I thought was excruciating pain, I lifted this cat and I took her. We took some time to figure out, and the vet couldn't tell us if it was male or female. So we took the cat, them, and we brought Pantera home, and she was, I always refer to her as female, because that's what the first vet had told us, and she was just such a difficult cat. Like she could, like she had her loving days, but she was difficult. She would, and we still did, I still adored her. I just thought like she was, you know, the most wonderful animal, the most wonderful animal in the world, and I established a very deep connection with Pantera. That relationship really helped me understand on a deeper level, not, you know, what we were talking about before, the philosophical aspect of, you know, animal liberation, but the emotional aspect for me, the behavioral aspect, the empathetic aspect that I was dealing with someone. I wasn't dealing with some abstract concept about animal rights. I was dealing with an individual with a being that was difficult, that, you know, that had preferences, that liked to be pets sometimes and not others, that perfectly knew where, you know, where the bowl of food was and what they needed to do to get attention, that had moods and a personality. And that realization was very profound in my journey in becoming an advocate and becoming an activist. And then secondly, I would say two farmed animals. In 2007, I participated in what's called an open rescue. So that's something Animal Equality began doing in Europe in 2007. And we would enter a farm, generally a factory farm in Spain. We would film what was happening, and we would take some of the sickest animals out, bring them to the vet, and then take them to a sanctuary. That visit in August 2007, we went to a pig farm, and there was mother sows, and they were in what are called farrowing crates. These are crates where they're in metal bars, they've just given birth, and they can't even turn around. They can just stand and lie down, and they can give no kind of warmth to their babies.
I've seen some of your footage, and it's
heartbreaking. And we took six of the piglets. We brought them to, some of them were clearly very sick. We brought them to a vet and then took them to a place where they would be taken care of adequately. And there was one of them, Gracie, called her Gracie. And she was like a colored piglet. She had like black and gray patches. And she, again, I must have something for animals with strong personalities, but she was so difficult. Like of all of them, she was the matriarch. She was bossing all of the other pigs around. She grew to be very big. And she ended up being the oldest pig. She died a few years ago, but she ended up being the oldest pig in Spain because pigs are killed as part of a meat industry. They're killed when they're 6 months old. But of course, Gracie lived to be 15. So she died a few years ago in a sanctuary in Spain. And she was a very, very special animal, a clear personality, clear preferences. She loved chips. So we would bring bags of chips to her.
I also love chips, Gracie.
I do too. And she would just go around, you know, insane. And then the last one is baby. It's also a sad story. It's a baby rabbit that was called Garulo. And I was doing an investigation also into rabbit farms in Spain. We visited 72 rabbit farms. And we were leaving a rabbit farm we just filmed, and we just walked over to the trash can because we generally open the trash can and it's full of discarded animals. And we filmed that so people see what happens with, you know, animals that die on the farm. They're just thrown into the bin. And there was, in a plastic bag, there was a little baby. He was literally this size. And he was still alive. And he was in the trash. And they closed the plastic bag. So he died asphyxiating. And we immediately opened it. We took Garulo with us. It was, again, this size. Drove him in the car. Spent time with him. I was just telling you, like, you matter. I love you. You're special. Right? It was just this animal that would most probably die. And we took him to the vet, and unfortunately he died a few hours later, but he did have those hours of, you know, of contact. And it just has helped me really understand how the industry sees animals, right? We live with our cats and dogs. I have two cats at home. I absolutely adore them. People adore their cats and their dogs. They do anything for them. They're members of their family. They spend hundreds of dollars on toys and this poor Garulo, who was born on a farm, and they knew he was going to die because he was sick, and it just mattered so little that not even killing him humanely was an option, because that would cost too much, and they would just throw him so he'd die in the worst way possible. His life didn't matter at all. So those three stories, I think, those three animals have really had an impact on me.
I can hear the progression in those animals, and I just want to reflect back a few things. One, I've been loved by difficult animals, and I find that now in hindsight, maybe not when it was happening, but now I find it, so I can say it to you, I find it to be just almost a nod of a testimony to like the evolution of our spirits, because I feel like animals who have strong preferences, who can't be molded and shaped into our liking, they require to be loved by someone who's going to accept them as they are. And that just requires a kind of mind and heart that's already been open to animals. And so I find it to be, it makes me so teary. I find it to be an honor. It's just such an honor. And you, at such a young age, you already were that ahead in your evolution of what really matters and what love is, that Pantera and Gracie
Pantera
were able to see in you that you would accept them.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And I think it's so interesting. For me, one of the realizations I think that's been most important, and that I always try when I'm speaking to people, and when it's not hen, it's not a pig, it's not a dog, it's this dog, it's this cat, it's this hen, it's this pig. And we see it, you know, I have two cats. Linfe is loving and warm and he's not afraid of anything. And my other cat, Glenn, is not the bravest cat in the world. Like as Jose and I say, it's like, you know, he's afraid of everything. He's always with Jose. He's a more anxious cat. We can see that in humans, right? There's humans that are more anxious, humans that are more calm. And it's the same with animals. They're individuals. Each one has a unique and distinct personality that makes them unique, makes them different. And some of them, as you say, will choose to love you and others won't, because you're not just, they're kind of human. And I think that's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. I was about to say that exact same word. How wonderful. What a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
We do it to people, right? We do it to children. We do it to our parents, mm-hmm. to the elderly. Like, we want so much to influence and quote unquote control for our own benefit. And I feel like it's a real opportunity to love an animal who you don't quote unquote own, to love an animal that you have a relationship with where maybe you can't touch their paws or their ears. Maybe there are limits and boundaries, but you can respect and care for them anyways. I've had fosters who maybe I like to sleep cuddling and holding a dog, but that's not best for them. Mm. That's not what they want. So it's like, can I love that dog? Can I set that dog up to be adopted into the right home and be respected and know that they'll be safe? Like that's my, that's my job as a foster. So I think it starts with animals, but it always goes to people too, because if we can learn, if we can learn to do this for them, we can do this for each other and vice versa.
How do you find those boundaries with animals? How do you find the, you do so much work with animals that need help, with dogs that need help. And I know that one of your strengths, one of your passions is working with difficult dogs. How do you establish and recognize those boundaries in them?
Thank you for asking that. I'm like, wait, I have questions for you, but I do want to answer that because it's my favorite topic.
It's a conversation. Of course, I have so much to learn from you too.
Oh my God, you're one of my role models. So thank you for saying that. But I am. I know it's kind of a hokey, cheesy answer, and that's okay with me. You know, when you meditate or like hypnotherapy or yoga, or even if you're driving down the highway and you just have that happy moment because the right song comes on and the temperature's right and the window's down, like that more than me moment.
Mm.
I get it the most when I'm with animals. I especially get it the most when I'm with dogs because they're the animal I'm around the most.
Mm.
When I'm with, I find those boundaries because I listen. And as someone who is quite verbose and talks a lot, my child just told me the other day, she's like, I need less words from you. I was like, wow. I was like, you're six and you're right.
Can children say that to their parents nowadays?
You know, they can. They can.
That wasn't allowed in my time.
We just talked about acceptance. So I'm going to say yes. But yeah, like it's this other part of me that's more than me, and I lean into it. I listen.
Yeah.
I just listen, and I trust what I'm getting from the animal. I'm not going to say I'm an animal communicator. I'm not, but I just trust what I'm getting, the vibe I'm getting, the message, the feeling. And that means, Sharon, that I trust that animal, but it also means I trust myself in the presence of that animal. And that is a fucking gift.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Every time I'm at the shelter with a dog or with a cat, I don't take them home only because I'm allergic, although I have taken some home. I have fostered cats and sneezed my way into their adoptions. But that's what I get. What a huge gift. There is no like having individual needs or preferences or being quote unquote difficult or whatever you want to call it is nothing. It doesn't tip the scale for what I get, which is to trust them to tap into something greater than me and then to trust me. That's the most beautiful gift that anyone can give me. Mm-hmm. So I just listen. And because animals keep me quiet, imagine that, you guys, because they do, I just go slower. And sometimes I get it wrong. You know, sometimes I make the wrong call and have to learn again. But there's something about being with animals that I'm just more forgiving and I get over it so I can get onto that other side with them. But it's such a together process.
Yeah, that's incredible and very, very inspiring. And I can definitely, I think some of the best experiences I've had have been related to the animals that I've lived with, which have mostly been cats, and also the intense experiences you have when you're visiting. So when I'm visiting a factory farm and just looking at that mother in a crate and looking at her eyes and just being able to have that moment of there's someone there and I see you and I know you see me. And I hope you know that, you know, I'm doing everything I can to get you out of there. And maybe I won't be able to get you out of that crate, but I'll give my life to, so there's not other ewes that are in that situation. And those very difficult, intense moments of just communication with animals are the most important experiences I've had in my life.
I mean, I'm blowing my nose. I'm smart enough to bring a tissue this round to the interview because I'm really amazed at your ability to hold space for that. And Gruelo, or the name, whatever the name was of the baby bunny that I just said incorrectly, I'm sure.
Gruelo.
For him to have had, you know, the other thing I was going to mention is, first of all, to see a pig in Spain is probably very powerful, a country that the relationship with pig there is something that I know not a lot about, but I know it's very intertwined. So I'm sure that pig that you saw, that mom, this baby bunny, what a universe, what a lifetime they had to be in your presence, just to feel someone who really is giving their life, who really is doing that work every day. And not only in the work you do, but in how you live. It just goes to show you that a moment can be a lifetime.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of the things that we've done is try to bring all of our leadership has been in factory farms because they need to know, right? If you're going to be at Animal Equality, if you're going to lead and work at Animal Equality, you need to have these experiences. You need to know, you need to be able to talk about what's happening. But another thing I was going to say is that there is that bringing that to as many people as possible. And that's why we do these investigations, why we get the media to show what is happening inside factory farms. And also why we've rescued so many animals. We've rescued over 100 animals from factory farms in Italy, in the UK, in Spain, in Germany. And people connect with the animal. They see the animal. You see the hen. I remember there was a hen I rescued, and you could see this animal, and her beak had been cut because they put them in cages that are so small where they're just attacking each other. So the solution of the industry is, oh, they're stressed and they're attacking each other. We'll just cut their beak off. This is for egg-laying hens. And they're in cages. Each one has the space of a piece of paper. They can't spread their wings. They're on, you know, their feet, they're on metal bars, on metal cages the whole time. They never see the light of day. They just are there and eat and try to move and carry out normal behaviors, and they're never able to. And taking that animal from that cage and bringing, in the case of this hen, to a sanctuary and seeing the first thing they do is establish they haven't forgotten to be a hen. The first thing they do is they scratch, they have a dust bath, they lie in the sun, they go up and you know, they're curious about you, about other hens. And these profound experiences, and when people see them, they change them, right? It's again, it's not a hen, it's not a pig, it's this individual that is different from so many others. And we have millions and millions in these capos, in these factory farms.
How do you see what you see? How do your private investigators see what they see? Undercover investigators see what they see? How do you carry that and go on? How do you carry that and have hope? I've asked this before of guests, but I especially want to ask it of you, because at some point it becomes a mental choice. And I'm wondering how you have the fortitude to continue to have hope and to continue to enjoy your life, knowing that this is going on day in and day out.
In my case, the most important thing for me is living a life with purpose. And we know from psychology, and we know from people who are about to die, and you know, they ask them what they talk about their regrets. And one of the things they regret the most is not spending time with their family and friends, and this idea of purpose, having a life with purpose. So having a life that is full of purpose is incredibly important to me. And that is one of the reasons why I, and I think other people, undercover investigators and the people who work at Animal Equality, have the grit and the resilience that they have. And also living with gratitude and living, seeing everything that's changing. Of course, there's pushbacks, but if I open a history book and I see where animals were 10 years ago, I see that Europe is about to ban cages, that a lot of countries in Europe, like Austria, like Germany, like the UK, have already banned cages for animals. I see how vegan and vegetarian restaurants are opening up everywhere. I see things like Prop 12 in California, that is the strictest animal welfare protection in the world. I see Mexico, that is beginning to pass legislation in some of its states recognizing farmed animals for the first time in history. That is focusing on how much is changing. We don't see it from day to day. We don't see it necessarily from week to week or month to month. But if you look at where we were with animals 10 years ago and where we are now, especially for farmed animals, the change is incredible. And also, to be an activist, you have to be an optimist. If we were pessimists, we would just be, there's nothing we can do. We just have an approach to life, like, doesn't matter. But I see people with their dogs and cats. I see people's reaction when they see footage of factory farms. People care. And then we're optimists. I'm an optimist. I think and I believe in the power of people's changing and the power of people making decisions that are going to help animals. And there's been surveys done, and I think it's up to 54% of people in the U.S. consider that animal welfare is a very important issue. And up to 84% don't want to see animals hurt as part of the food industry process. Mm-hmm. So people care. And we're just making sure that we're able to establish that connection, to open up something in them that already exists and that we help them understand or discover.
I love that. I really, really, truly love that. And how, in a way, you're bringing them home, because that is our natural state. And I just want to highlight this idea of choosing what to focus on, because that's everyone's job, whether you care about animals to a huge extent and you live your life for them, or you just have one pet that you adore. And wherever you fall on the animal loving spectrum, whatever your life looks like, that's like the only thing we'd really have, is a decision to tell ourselves stories that make us feel good and to choose thoughts that make us feel good, so that we feel good, so that the feelings created are good, so that our actions are in line with what we want, and so that the results then confirm whatever it is you believe. So if you're, if you have trained yourself and are strong enough and really amazing enough, Sharon, to be able to do this work and see what you see, and yet still manage your energy to such an extent that you can focus on the progress that's being made, well, then I hope that you give classes on how to change mindsets, because that's really, really superpower. You know, to take it that dark and be able to choose that light is a superpower.
Thank you. No, I think it's a superpower we all have, right? I always think that the only freedom that we have is that we can choose our impressions, we can choose how we judge things, we can choose what we focus on, and we can choose our behaviors, right? And in a situation, you can choose gratitude, you can choose to focus on all of the progress that has already been made for animals and contribute for there to be even more progress. And the attitude that you choose to have is going to be, it's going to be influencing so many people. If people see me yeah. and they're like, oh, everything's terrible, you know, they're, how am I going to be able to lead people? How am I going to be able to inspire people? So not only is it important to inspire people, but also for my own mental health and stability and to be able to continue doing the work I do. The purpose, the mission, and focusing on the change, on the gratitude, on what I can control. And I'm in control of all of those things. And I want to make sure that I, you know, I'm always in a state of mind or creating a state of mind that makes it easier or that facilitates me continuing to do this work.
Wow. It's beautiful to align your self-care with that commitment. I think there's a real ripple effect to that because you and I know that I don't want to now take it to the negative, but it is impossible to have a free and just experience reality if we're still practicing oppression, domination, abuse, neglect, and cruelty of animals day in and day out. Mm-hmm. It's just not a possibility. If you can do that to a living being, you can do that to a living being. Mm-hmm. If you can just turn off your compassion, just find the button and turn it off for that living being, then you know where the button is.
Exactly.
Right? You can turn that, can decide to turn that button off. That's so scary.
Yeah. I don't think that's everybody. I think that there is periods in during life where people, you know, we've always heard stories of people in their teens and they tend to have these experiences where they're more aggressive or they hurt animals. But most people, I think, grow out of that. And then, of course, there's a small percentage of society psychopaths who we know and we're able to identify cruelty to animals as that being one of the steps towards cruelty and abuse to humans. I think that most of the people I interact with, from, you know, people, my parents who are older, people I went to school with, people I meet here in the U.S. as an advocate, people I've met around the world, people I've met in India, most people care about animals. Most people understand that it is not okay to hurt an animal. And to hurt an animal, meaning that they recognize that there is someone that is being hurt, that there is a subject that is being affected by our actions. And then there's everything we build, you know, to justify some of our behaviors, like eating meat or going to circuses, or in the case of Spain, going to bullfighting. But the reason is never hurting animals okay.
That's
okay.
Exactly what I was going to say.
The reason is always it's culture, or we've always done it, or, you know, the reason is never, oh, they're animals, it's okay. There's another reason that's built to so we don't listen to our, you know, to our conscience. And I think that a lot of people with the right, you know, with seeing the footage, with the right conversation, especially when we're changing laws or we're changing companies, we're also helping people do the right thing. If there's no caged eggs in a supermarket, people won't buy them, right? They won't. That's not a decision that they'll make. If there is great plant-based products like Beyond Meat or Impossible or others, it'll be easier for people. So we have to try to eliminate a lot of the resistance in order for people to make better choices. I mean, things like bullfighting, of course, I think they just need to be banned. And there's not an alternative to going to bullfighting. But in general, most people care about animals and understand that they're not desks. They're not chairs. They're living sentient beings.
I do agree with you. I do agree. And what's going and I do agree with you that most people would never list because the animal is getting harmed as a reason to do anything. And most people don't want to. So it's interesting, even thinking about buying dogs from the internet, not, you know, knowing that or maybe not knowing that it's most likely a puppy mill. If they don't, you know, if the dog is going to be sent to you and you don't see where they're coming from, no matter what the website says, just the many, many issues that go along with that, not to mention the cost. If people knew more and more information about what kind of place that would do that if they knew about the harm. I agree with you that most people wouldn't make that choice. I guess the deeper work is, like you spoke to, identifying that layer we put on top of our conscience, like you called out that ego we put on top of our ego. It's like so much removal that we allow to be placed on us that keeps us either not knowing or not paying attention. And I do think sometimes that if we live in a modern day time where the removal is part of what the money system is based on, you know, they're counting on our removal. And so I guess for anyone listening to Sharon's point, just being aware, just knowing in and of itself is an act of resistance.
Yeah. And so much, I mean, even if I think about bullfighting, I'm lucky my parents didn't like bullfighting. I never saw it at home. We'd never have it on the television. But when I became an activist, one of the first things that I did was I would go to bullfights to protest. So I would be at the bull ring. And then during one of the breaks, when after one of the bulls is killed, they drag the animal out. And I would jump with other activists into the bull ring with banners that said, you know, ban bullfighting. And that would get so much media attention, so much coverage. It was something that had never been done in Spain. But going to these bullfights, it made me realize that, because I would think anyone who goes to a bullfight is just terrible. Like, how can you just sit through torturing an animal? But then you would see all of the mechanisms that are created. That is not the attention, right? Of course, it's the whole thing of the colors and the art and the dance thing, but then how loud the music is. So you're not hearing the animal scream. You're not hearing the bull trying to, you know, yell. How quickly they clean, you know, how quickly they clean the ring when the bull is killed. So you're not seeing the blood. So there's all of these elements that have to be added to not, for the conscious, as you're saying, to not say, hey, this is not right. And the same thing happens with meat. When we go to a supermarket and we buy meat, we're seeing a clean package that is, you know, transparent with something that looks pretty clean. You're not seeing the farm. You're not seeing the tumors on the pigs. You're not, or the chickens. You're not seeing the slaughterhouse. You're just seeing this perfectly packed product. And all of this is a way that makes and disconnects us more and more and more from that bull, from that hen, from that chicken, and from that pig. And the only reason that's done is because there is a cognitive dissonance, because most people don't want to go to a slaughterhouse. Most people don't want to see what's happening. And if they do, they would have serious, you know, serious moral questions around their behaviors.
But whoever is, there's someone profiting off that cow. That's the part that is, and that person doesn't have to be a twisting the mustache evil. That's not what I'm, that's, you know, everybody, if a hen is a unique individual, so is a person with, you know, good and bad and preferences and needs and et cetera. And yet I guess it's a real call, and I don't claim to have the answers, but just something to think about. You know, to whoever's listening, whether you work in a nonprofit or a corporation or government business, how do we get, you know, interest from the top? How do we get decision makers and people who stand to profit the most? What's the buy-in and what's the incentive for them to remove the layers between what's right and what they want, so that that trickles down?
Yeah. There's someone, for example, like Cory Booker, who I don't know if you've heard about, he's a vegan.
Yeah.
And he's trying to pass a law that would not allow new CAFOs, new factory farms to be built. So there's I think Senator Warren is supporting it too. There's a lot of people who, I mean, we've seen with Joaquin Phoenix and Rooney Mara, who I've done an investigation with. We've done protests with Joaquin and in Spain and in Italy. One of our team members in Italy the other day at Lecce, she was speaking at the Italian Senate and speaking to politicians, speaking to congressmen and women speaking to senators about cruelty to animals. And she was telling me that some of them were crying. Mm. And the same when we were in Mexico, we did investigations into slaughterhouses in Mexico. This was one of the most cruel things we've ever witnessed, with pigs that were being just a knife stabbed on their side and bleeding to death in absolute agony. And showing this in the Congress of Jalisco in Mexico, and congressmen and women just saying, you know, you could just see them shaking their heads, and they voted for standing to be made mandatory throughout the state. And now other states are passing similar laws, with the state of Hidalgo last week, again, thanks to animal equalities investigations, passing a chapter of the law that protects farmed animals. And the first time in the history of Mexico, a chapter in the law related to farmed animals. So just have to continue. We just have to continue working. This is continue reaching people, you know, in every way possible. And every week, from speaking to family, to friends, to reaching thousands of people like you're reaching on your podcast, to speaking with, you know, to sending letters to politicians, to demanding change. There's so much that can be done. And again, if I opened a book 10 years ago, I never would have thought the amount of change that I've seen for farmed animals in particular, but for animals in general throughout the world.
Well, you never cease to make me want to take more action. And I'm sure everybody listening to you will agree. Can you please, Sharon, tell our listeners how they can get behind, support, and stay in the loop with animal equality and with you?
Sure. At the moment, we're looking to hire, if anyone who's listening is interested, we're looking to hire several positions, but one of them is undercover investigators. Mm-hmm. So if there's anyone it's a very difficult job, but if there's anyone who's interested in doing that kind of work, they can visit our website, animalequality.org, and there's a job section. And there's several positions open there. One of them is for undercover investigators. We have several petitions at the moment. We're asking for a ban on factory farming in the U.S. We're trying to get a foie gras banned in the U.S. in as many city states as possible. We're currently working with the city of Portland in Oregon to ban the sale of foie gras. Foie gras, if people don't know, is basically the diseased liver of a duck or geese, and they're forced fed with huge metal tubes. It's awful. They're forced fed for days with metal tubes until the liver becomes a certain size, and then they're slaughtered and the liver is consumed. And we're also working on different campaigns globally, mostly to end cages worldwide for animals and improve the welfare of chickens. All of the information is on our website, animalequality.org. And if someone wants to reach out to me personally, they can write me an email at SharonN@animalequality.org, or follow me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram at Sharon Nunez. Still a lot of work to be done. We're always looking for volunteers and team members. So it would be wonderful to welcome anyone who wants to make the world a better place for animals.
I can't think of a better leader. I'm so grateful that you came on this show.
Oh,
and I'm
grateful
you're in my life. Thank you, Sharon, for everything you do.
Thank you so much, Katya. It's a pleasure to see you. Thanks for everything you do, for being a friend and an activist and a guidance and for all the work you do with animals. And I can't wait to see you soon. And I'm always here for anything you need.
Me too, for you. And then 10 years, we're going to be celebrating all we've done.
Absolutely.
Thanks for tuning in to The Animal That Changed You, a weekly podcast that features extraordinary people talking about the extraordinary animal that changed their life. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. Follow us on Instagram at The Animal That Changed You, and tell your friends. If you've got a story about an animal that's changed your life, DM me, tell me about it, or tag us. We would love to hear. We appreciate you. And honestly, we love your animals so much. Thanks for being here.
For more great iRaw podcasts, visit iRawPod.com. That's IRoarPod.com.